Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 31st of August, recording at 9:09 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. Asian stock markets, mostly a little bit easier, although Thailand and Malaysia were certainly bucking that trend, possibly among some others. Now, there was one big hit, and that was in Japan, which had a very bad performance, down 3.5%, influenced by the rebound in the yen. European stock markets closed with small gains, with the exception of Switzerland, which had a slight loss. The Americas ranged most of the day, or at least Wall Street ranged, a little bit in the plus column, a little bit in the minus column, and it staved off some late weakness. Well, for the most part, the Dow and the S&P closing with teensy gains, and the NASDAQ down a tiny bit. The other markets, regional markets, did better. Well, some of them did. Mexico was quite firm, and Brazil had a rally of 1.37%. In long-dated government bonds, more strength, with the U.S. Treasuries closing quite close to their highs for the futures markets. In currencies, looks like a bit of a mixed day here. For the dollar, down a tiny bit on the U.S. dollar index, mixed. Its biggest decline was against the yen. The greenback fell back to 84.09 yen. That's down 53 ticks. In the commodities arena, the industrial commodities were down. Crude oil, which had bounced splendidly last week, was hit hard, down over $3 at one point, and is currently down $2.95 as I speak, at $71.75 for NYMEX crude. I think I mentioned all the industrial metals were down a bit. I think that's sugar was among commodities. White sugar was slightly higher. The grain and bean complex saw some late profit taking, having been up earlier in the day. The firm area was for gold and silver. They had been down early in the day, but gold is currently trading at 1247.65. That's up 1068 on the day, has been up to 1250. And silver last traded at $19.37. Palladium up a tiny bit, platinum down a little bit. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, there's a lot of nervousness, as you will not be surprised to hear. Most of the nervousness seems to me to be in the United States, although there's a fair amount of nervousness in Europe as well, but I get the impression that there's more in the United States. And the daily drip feed release of statistics is regarded variously as horrendous to horrific, and most of that's actually correct. But I would also point out that the overall trend that's taking place, deleveraging of consumer debt, is quite positive. The rebuilding of bank balance sheets, although there are plenty of small minor banks in the U.S. that are being wound up, and occasionally a bigger bank that's being wound up, but the banking industry is highly profitable thanks to the Fed, and thanks to ultra-low interest rates, corporations are benefiting from the ultra-low interest rates, where they're able to borrow very cheaply, and the soft dollar is helping the U.S. multinational companies, which are leveraged to the stronger global economy, not least in Asia. So there, as I've said before, there are a lot of favorable trends here, but that doesn't alter the fact that the immediate news is, well, as I described it, between horrendous and diabolical, if you follow the daily statistic du jour. So, what type of situation does that leave us with? Well, you know, we have two different worlds. It's almost as if we're on two different planets. We have the retrenching, the disinflationary and deflationary pressures that are in the West and also in Japan. And we have the stronger growth, very strong growth, and inflationary pressures in Asia. Now, until recently, actually, for a number of these Asian markets, they have resisted Wall Street's pull to the downside that we've seen in August. But they can't hold out indefinitely if the Wall Street leash effect is negative. And we've seen India slip a little bit in the last week. Some of the ASEAN markets, which have been incredibly strong, are still resisting overall. But again, we've seen some of the strong rallies in the Central and South American stock markets. I just pause here and pull back a little bit. Now, the U.S. market is oversold on short-term indicators. I've mentioned that before, but it is lacking in the upward dynamics that we need to see to trigger another bear squeeze. We are range-bound overall, but we're testing the lower side of those ranges for some of these Western markets, and most importantly on Wall Street. And as Owen pointed out today in a review, that the U.S. bank indices are underperforming in here right now. They have taken out their July lows, which are merely being tested by the broader indices. So that's a soft picture overall. We're still in a period of seasonal underperformance for Wall Street and the Western markets generally. So we have to be prepared for more of the same, ranging at best in the OECD stock markets. But the watch until we get, well, on my script, until we get into October, particularly the latter half of October, when I'm hoping, there's no guarantee that anything happens in markets except for volatility, as someone once famously said, J.P. Morgan it was, of course, that they will fluctuate. Until we get into the fourth quarter of the year, and then I do feel that we're likely to see a stronger performance overall because interest rates remain low, because valuations are not unattractive, and because we have this strong economic leadership coming from Asia. Now, that's, I think, pretty much it as far as stock markets are concerned, but I would also point out that fortunately the fuller money themes continue to hold out quite well. That includes the ASEAN markets. China's not doing badly on the shares, the H shares and the Hong Kong listed shares that that one is able to buy. But there are some risks still to the downside in the short term, the next few weeks, until or unless we do see some very clear upward dynamics signaling another bear squeeze. I think that will happen, but is it going to happen this week, or are we going to have to wait until a little wait a little longer, and will we have to wait until the second half of October? I don't know the answer to that, and nobody else does either. Now, what about these government bonds in here? And it's fashionable for people to say, well, bond investors are smarter than equity investors, and therefore they're telling the real story. Well, I've always taken that with a grain of salt, but there's no doubt that there's a momentum move still in play in these long-dated government bonds. I think the yields are risible against all but an absolute depression environment, what Bernanke is determined to avoid, including erring on the side of inflation to avoid that. And I don't think that it's etched in granite yet that the Europe and the USA are going to follow the fate of what Japan has experienced over the last 20 years or more. So to me, the long-dated government bond yields, and I've said this pretty much on a daily basis, do not offer value, but the trends still favor the bulls, although I feel they're paying an increasingly high price or taking an increasingly large risk for their so-called safe haven investment here. In terms of currencies, we're getting more articles talking about a potential dollar collapse. I've never been in the dollar collapse school, although I've been a bear of the dollar more often than not. And I've also said on a number of occasions that I didn't think that the dollar could sustain a major rally without a fright in markets. So if you're very bearish of equity markets, then you might look favorably on the U.S. dollar in terms of a bounce near current levels. I think the trading will probably be fairly quiet overall. The most interesting currency, I think, is the yen, which really is a not so slow motion train crash for Japan's economy in terms of the export earnings and competitiveness of Japan's leading companies. And the bickering and infighting that's going on is not doing anything to anything to help. So Owen and I have said on so many occasions with the Fuller Money Service that in this environment, which we've been in really for the last, not quite a decade, but a good many years, intense pressures due to globalization, that in this environment, no country wants a strong currency, but some countries need a weak currency more than most. And I think that certainly applies to Japan, and the evidence of that, which I think is undeniable, is in the underperformance of Japanese equities right now. If Japan ever really does weaken its yen, and the old adage that there's nothing they can do about a strong currency is utter nonsense. All you have to do is print more of it, and it will and weaken before too long, particularly if you start telling people that you're printing more of it and let them see the extra supply, that will undermine the currency. But as far as Japan's stock market is concerned, it's going to, in my opinion, going to continue to underperform until the market becomes convinced that the yen really has peaked and is on its way down in a major correction. Gold, it's a stellar performance here, edging up in a steady fashion towards the highs that we have in that 1250 to 1260 region. In past cycles, we've seen gold run in September on occasions, but it's tended to be every other September as gold has moved within those cycles of approximately 18-month consolidations followed by breakouts to the upside in September. That's what we saw in September 2005 and September 2007 and September 2009. So this is one of the odd in-between years. And if gold were to break out and run again in September or later this year, it would be differing from the pattern that we've seen for the last several years, which I referred to as largely those 18-month consolidations and then strong moves to the upside, lasting on average about six months. Now, of course, there's no reason why gold has to stick to that 18-month cyclical pattern, and which I think started as something that people actually observed and helped to reinforce and to cause to become self-feeding for a while. If the interest in gold is sufficiently strong, we'll see that push it up out of this overall trading range. And the and based on chart evidence, we have to give that hypothesis the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise. And proven otherwise means breaking the rising, at least breaking the rising 200-day moving average, and that is certainly not under threat at this time. So gold still does look interesting. I'm glad that I've got at least a small stake there in the futures market. It is a position that I will add to on the basis of strength when I have enough cushion of profit where I can put in an in-the-money stop. And I will leverage up in gold if we do get an upside breakout and strong move in this cycle. I'll let the chart show me what to do. And if I do that in gold, I'll almost certainly do it in silver as well. And I think that's pretty much covered the highlights here today. So all the best to all of you.